this meeting to order, and on behalf of the House and Senate Health and Social Services Committees, I welcome everyone. First, I'd like to thank the legislators in attendance. There will be more joining us soon, but more than anything, I'd like to thank the Key Coalition for this key campaign and the hearing that I'm sure we're going to hear today that's going to be very touching. And I believe this is your 22nd Key Coalition campaign, and your annual trip to Juneau does keep the wait list for services at the forefront of the legislators' minds. And Senator Betty Davis does sincerely apologize. She was required to attend another meeting, so she could not be here today, but she does send her regards and is working hard on the priorities of the Key Coalition. And this hearing is open to all the legislators who may be coming and going again during this meeting. But because the Senate Finance will be beginning its meeting at 9 a.m., we will be closing the meeting at approximately 8:45. And so if there are any senators that would like to make a few opening comments, they're certainly welcome to do so at this time.
Oh, we need to get on with the testimony.
Okay. Well, that's there we go. Emily, may you please identify yourself and your affiliation and kind of let us know how you'd like this to proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Pasquin, Senators and Representatives. My name is Emily Ennis, and I'm Executive Director of the Fairbanks Resource Agency and also President of the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities, representing over 30 agencies around our state providing services to children and adults with developmental disabilities. However, this morning, I am first and foremost a member of the Key Coalition of Alaska, and I'm here to introduce to you some very important people who have traveled the distance, some with great effort and personal courage, to talk with you today. For 22 years, this annual trip to Juneau has been made by hundreds of individuals who have spoken for thousands of others around our state who could not join us, or who are unable to speak for themselves. That number is close to 12,000 people in Alaska who have developmental disabilities. Today, we have the grave responsibility for speaking for them as well. For those of you who are not familiar with a developmental disability, you should know that it occurs before the age of 22, maybe noted at birth, or it could be acquired later through a childhood illness, a car accident, or other injury. Sometimes it comes with diagnoses like cerebral palsy, mental retardation, Down syndrome, epilepsy, or autism. But regardless of how it's described, you can be sure that it's expected to be lifelong, to cause substantial limitations, and to require some form of support or service, generally lifelong as well. As members of the Key Coalition, our mission is to support and promote the dignity, status, and equality of all Alaskans with disabilities. You would imagine that in this day and age, with a nation as diverse as ours, when the President of our United States is a person of color, with the historic Americans with Disabilities Act years behind us, that we would not still be struggling with the issues of human justice and civil rights for a population that was so long devalued, segregated, and treated as invisible. Yet I am here today to tell you that bias and inequity still exist for them. However, in Alaska, we have made extraordinary strides to change this, thanks to you, the leaders of our great state, because you believe that individuals with disabilities had the right to live in the community. You closed our one and only institution, Harborview Developmental Center, and you provided the necessary funds to create community services whose scope and quality rival any state in our country. Today, over 3,000 individuals benefit from DD Home and Community-Based Services, and we want to sincerely thank you for the work you have done to build these comprehensive and critically needed services. These are services that keep families strong and hopeful as they care for their children with disabilities, and services that help adults to have a meaningful life, often contributing to their own support and giving back to their community. Over the past 40 years, you have built a DD service system now comprised of over 30 organizations that span our Alaska state, bridging rural and urban life and culture. You've laid a foundation for a wide range of lifespan supports that provide alternatives to more expensive institutional care. And with the closing of Harborview, these services are Alaska's only alternative to hospitals and nursing homes for people with developmental disabilities. They are now an integral part of our long-term care system. DD services also represent a significant investment and a valuable asset for the state of Alaska. And like any valued asset, they require a good asset management plan. Sadly, this has been neglected. Not only has the asset management plan become inadequate, there is no longer a budget for maintenance or a reserve for replacement and repair. In fact, the allocated revenue for maintaining this valued asset is no longer meeting the operational costs. And we see this neglect resulting in the sure and steady erosion of their very foundation upon which this 40-year investment rests. Now, if this were simply a building, it would be a shame not to keep it in good repair, not to allocate funds to sustain its operations. But if you didn't, perhaps it would no longer be able to house offices or provide storage or serve as a parking lot. But our DD system is not a building. It's a significant part of our long-term care system. It's more cost-effective than any institutional setting, and it assures that the values of community life and culture remain accessible to individuals who were not long ago denied this right. As you listen to our speakers this morning, you will hear what this investment means to them and to their loved ones. The DD system is not simply a venue for needed services. It represents much, much more than respite care, a group home, or training for employment. For the families you meet today and thousands more around our state, the DD system offers hope for a full and inclusive life. It helps families stay together, and it assures that our society will be far better and richer for its unified diversity and its sacred belief that every individual is valued. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. So, Fred, please identify yourself.
For the record, my name is Fred Villa. I'm an Associate Vice President for the University of Alaska in Workforce Programs. I'm a member of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. And most importantly today, I am a representative of the Key Coalition and a parent of a developmentally disabled child. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Key Coalition and the services that are provided. As a parent, you know, you don't select some things that happen to you in life. And my formal education is as a recreational therapist, and I served in human services in three different states. And that was a profession for a short time, and I was very idealistic at the time. I changed profession, and now I'm on the other side. I was a service provider, and now I'm receiving services. My child was born with a condition, it's called cri de chat. In French, that means cry of the cat, it's 5P minus. It's a 1 in 75,000 chance that somebody would have a deletion on this chromosome. We didn't understand it, really. We didn't know it was going to happen. And we went about 7 months before it was even identified formally. To our great our great benefit, it was identified. And as such, we're able to not be placed on the waiting list. We're able to receive services. And in fact, within a week, we are already receiving services from the state. The infant learning services that we received included educational therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. And the service we received through ACCA in Fairbanks was phenomenal. The mountain of paperwork, navigating through the forms and the issues while you're going through a grieving process, trying to understand why this happened. For us, it wasn't a first child. This was our seventh of eight children. We had six children before. We love them all, and all of them were healthy without any developmental disability abnormalities. Seventh came along, and it was a shock after months of not being aware of the situation that was occurring to our family. We suddenly became immersed in a subculture of disabilities, and what we've come to realize is it's a reflection of ourselves. We are minusculely, molecularly the same as everyone here in this room. The pull away for me is to say, there's no difference in us. We are talking to you, and we are a mere reflection of your families, of the people in Alaska. The importance of services, I can't tell you how it affects our lives now. Again, with eight children in the family, you know, and running all over town, trying to work in the logistics, plus the four therapies that we still have ongoing, plus the behavioral difficulties. Without the respite care, without the services, without the social network of people with disabilities, our family would be in frazzles. And that's probably not to say it isn't. Senator Pascavan is a member of our church, and he sees our congregation walk in and take over our area of the pews, and we're up and down quite a bit. But it's important for us to have that network. I'm very humbled to even be able to speak on behalf of the folks behind me and in this room. From my workforce investment position, we recognize on the board this incredible human resource, the opportunity for developing this workforce into productive occupations and filling part of our occupational gap. There's two phases of this workforce development issue that we address here. One is the people with disabilities and bringing them the skill levels and the opportunities and the training to be able to enter into the workforce. On the other side, we have to have the skilled workers to work with people with disabilities. We need to have the therapists. We need to have the educators. We need to have the career and technical educators. We need the support services. When we don't have those things in place, and when in fact we have people just waiting for the bare services, we're neglecting an incredible resource, and I think the most valuable resource in the state is our people, ourselves. I encourage you to look at the legislation that's going before you regarding some of the issues that are inhibiting the efforts that the KIA Coalition has had, which is to provide services and to everyone and not have waiting lists. As a parent, I find it critical. I ask for your support, and I really hope that you can internalize and advocate on behalf of all of us, because I really believe that it's us, and we're looking at ourselves, and it's us that are talking to each other about this issue. There aren't any questions?
Thank you, Fred.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Kama Gregory, and I live in Anchorage. And thank you for your time this morning. I was hoping to have my 2.5-year-old here, but he would be very distracting. So he traveled with me from Anchorage because that is the reason why I'm here. I do have a background in education and different things, but my main role is to represent my son and the other infants that are like him. And I'd like to give you a little bit of background on him and the tremendous difference that infant learning and early intervention has made. That's what I'd like to talk to you about today. Before my son Jonah was born 2.5 years ago, I had a pretty normal pregnancy, and near the end, in the last trimester, I was told through an ultrasound that he would probably not make it to birth by three sets of specialists in three different states who reviewed his records. So we were, I suppose, fortunate that we knew ahead of time the dire prognosis that he had. So dealing with that was, you still deal with that as a parent, but he was born and actually did better at birth than they thought, but I was prepared to have every service available for him, and so immediately we referred to infant learning for various therapies. We did have to wait on a list, even though he was medically diagnosed, which I can't imagine another condition being medically diagnosed and being told you'll just have to wait a couple months to treat you. And unfortunately, that happened for him for a while, but he was able, we were fortunate again to advocate for him, and he was able to get different therapies from about 6 months on. So that was through programs for infants and children in Anchorage, and it was quite amazing. And as he grew, he missed every developmental milestone, which is quite, it's very hard to watch as a parent when you're doing everything you can and they're not making the grade, basically. So we continue to have therapies and hope for the best. And due to that early intervention, just yet a couple months ago, my son, who was nonverbal, we had sign language, we had signs all over the house, he started to talk. And he now, my husband is in the military in Afghanistan, and he can say Afghanistan, and he's 2.5. So, yeah, I'm bragging, I'm a mom. But yeah, I know, it's a weird thing to be happy about. But yes. So, but the bottom line is, all of the hopes, prayers, and dreams that I had as a parent, I did not have the skills to have the therapy to do for him. But I would have if I could have. I would have gone back to school and done them. But I relied on infant learning and early intervention to help my son not only learn to talk and communicate, which is just a gift that no one should take for granted, but also to walk on his own. He has hemiparesis, he has lots of medical conditions, but the bottom line is he walks now without any assistance, and that is also a dream come true. But I can tell you right now that I did not know that would happen, but without, again, infant learning and early intervention at the earliest stages, I would perhaps be here a couple years from now asking for something else as his later development. I feel the priority for infant learning and early intervention is so important because I have a child that sits on the plane next to me, can communicate with me, can walk, and will most likely test out of speech therapy, which is amazing due to the speech therapy that we get on a weekly basis. But again, I am one of the fortunate ones. I know families right now who are waiting in different areas of Anchorage, children who have cleft lips, who need speech therapy, and there's no one to give them speech therapy. And I have no answers for that, and these parents are hardworking parents, and they care about their children, and they just need help. And unfortunately, the providers, the funding has been flat for infant learning. I've done my research for the last 5 years, and I'm grateful for all that you have done, but these programs are trying to do more with less. And when you look at the studies, there's a study out that if you invest right now in infant learning 0 to 3 and early intervention, it pays off between $3 and $17 for the future. So it truly is an investment, which is a big word right now, and I understand that, but I'm here to tell you that I am a representative of what a wonderful investment it is, but there are so many families that need what we were able to have. And so what I'm asking for as we look at infant learning is to fund that increment, the $2 million increment, which is really bare bones in 5 years with no increase at all, so that they can operate these infant learning programs across the state at capacity, because there are still children waiting. And unfortunately, it's time sensitive, 0 to 3. It's a big time, and it makes a big difference. And I would really appreciate your support, and I know all the families that are here would appreciate your support. But mostly, I really hope that there would be more families that would be able to sit in front of you and be able to tell you what a difference it's made, because they had that opportunity, and they were able to watch their children develop to their full potential, whatever that may be. So as you're looking at the budget, I could speak to you about facts. I do know that infant learning programs right now, there's the IDEA Act, if you're familiar with that. That's been in place for a while, but that requires many referrals that go into infant learning, so they have less staff and more referrals. There's also an unfunded mandate with CAPTA, if you're familiar with the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, that's unfunded, and it came down in 2003, and again, that's great, we're identifying more earlier. I'm here to tell you it matters, but there's not the staff to fill that. So I know, I'm glad to live in this state. I believe that all people are valuable, and I've seen that there are wonderful services, but we need to be able to do more for people like my son. So thank you for your time and for listening to my story today.
Good morning, I'm Dana McGuire from Anchorage area. I currently work with Rick Nelson, he's also a longtime friend of mine. Rick Nelson was here 5 years ago speaking to you about the wait list for waiver services. At that time, he had only had PCA. He's 25 years old and has cerebral palsy as his only disability. Rick would like to share with you today some of his successes over the last 4 years with waiver services. Recap that just in case anybody missed anything. He was on the wait list for 8.5 years. He's currently attending UAA and going to receive his AA in Small Business Management this December, and he's going to continue on for his bachelor's in Business Administration, and he hopes to own a small business in the future. He's traveled the world. He's been to Japan and Ireland and all over the lower 48 advocating for people with disabilities and himself. He wanted to take this time to show you how the waiver services have been key to his success. And he also wants to thank you for continued funding to take people off the wait list and to maintain the current waivers, because it's so very important to all of us that are involved with the disability field.
Yay.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen.
My name is Jim Beck, and I'm the Executive Director at Access Alaska and a resident of Palmer, Alaska. And I'm here this morning to address an issue that I think is a little subtle, sometimes maybe even nuanced in the way it manifests itself in Alaska, but it has an immeasurable impact on persons with disabilities and elders throughout the state. One thing I'm sure that we can all agree on is that a strong home and community-based provider system is critical to our state's ability to meet the coming wave of long-term care users. The Lewin Group's 2006 long-term Medicaid forecast noted that costs were likely to quadruple between 2005 and 2025, and that our elder population was going to triple in that same period. Policy groups from the National Conference on State Legislatures to the AARP have all recommended that states rebalance their Medicaid spending in favor of home and community-based services. There's a great report out. I don't know if you've seen it. It's fairly new. It's the AARP's 2008 report, and the title of that report is A Balancing Act, States Long-Term Care Reform. And I'm just going to read you a really short quote from that report because it's important. The quote is that Medicaid, our nation's single largest source of funding for long-term services and supports, does not provide the range of choices people want. Instead, it continues to allocate a disproportionate share of its resources for institutional services. It goes on to say, on average, Medicaid dollars can support nearly three older people and adults with physical disabilities in home and community-based services for every person in a nursing home. Thus, to the extent that states provide home and community-based services instead of nursing home services, this shift in service delivery can be both cost-effective and responsive to the preferences of people with disabilities. And I'm sorry to read because I don't like to read to people. You guys can read the report yourself. But I think it's important to note, following that Alaska has the really envious position of being one of the top states in the nation in terms of balanced funding institutional Medicaid versus home and community-based services. Yet, another report, as recent as 2006, the PCG study, noted that, quote, since there is limited availability of community services in Alaska, there are many individuals placed in nursing facilities that do not desire nursing home settings. So even though we're in an envious position, we still have major issues with what I said is a subtle or nuanced issue, and really that's the institutional bias in terms of funding and policymaking in the state. You're going to hear, and you have heard, about the need to regularly review Medicaid rates for home and community-based agencies, and I must nod to Senator Ellison, SB 32. I believe that the issue of rate setting for our home and community-based providers is merely a symptom of an approach to long-term care policy in Alaska that tends to delegitimize home and community-based providers. And I think essentially what has happened over the years is that the state of Alaska has seemingly failed to recognize the pivotal role of providers in the home and community-based world in terms of our long-term care system. Alaska's home and community-based providers, and most of us are nonprofit organizations, I think might have faced what I think of as the charity mindset. And that says that we will respond to the needs of our communities and attempt to meet them because it's in our charitable missions to do so, in spite of the lack of resources to do so. And that's what we've been doing for decades, is trying to meet those needs, regardless of the resources that are afforded to us. And we do fundraisers, and we leverage other monies, and we write grants, and we do everything in our power to meet needs. And this is, frankly, in the face of shrinking grant budgets at the state, unrealistic administrative caps on grants with the state, and flat Medicaid reimbursement rates, sometimes for over a decade, while our costs continue to soar. And I belabor these points really for only one reason, because sitting here before you is really the backbone of Alaska's long-term care system. Because the fact of the matter is, if there are no home and community-based services, there is no long-term care system in this state or any other state. According to the latest quarterly report from our Division of Senior Disability Services, 5% of SDS clients are in nursing homes. And the last time I checked, that was a census of a little less than 700 nursing home beds. So thankfully, we have a system of long-term care being provided by home and community-based services in Alaska. And these are organization serving thousands of Alaskans in their own homes for the same price of serving several hundred in expensive institutions. Our organizations are well-run, cost-efficient businesses, not unlike other industry best-in-class businesses. We just happen to pursue a social mission that provides great benefit to Alaska and her citizens. In closing, I'm deeply concerned that without the protections offered by SB 32 and other policies hopefully yet to come, our organizations will continue to face a bias in the system of funding and policy making. It's perhaps no wonder when we realize that we are up against a healthcare lobby that is second only to the oil industry lobby. A significant portion of the $2 million spent in 2006 in healthcare lobby was lobbying for the most expensive institutional slice of our long-term care system. So today we bring our message directly to you with our staff and the families we support and their loved ones too. And our message is really very simple. Help us keep our system strong, and we will continue to help keep all Alaskans at home, in their communities, working, playing, and thriving for more decades to come. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Thank you very much for sharing some of your time today. I know you're all very busy. My name is Sean Woodard, and I am here from Fairbanks Resource Agency in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm representing a little bit of the side of the direct care workers, the folks that work in the homes with the developmentally disabled people and working with the respite and the families. There's so much I could say, and so to give it, you know, I could be here for a long time, and I know you're busy, so I'm going to try to cap it and keep it short. But until I moved here in November of 2000 to Fairbanks, or April of 2000, I really had no experience in the DD community. You know, as a kid, the developmentally disabled person on the bus, you know, living my life, you know, once in a while a neighbor down the way you say hi to once in a while. Well, shortly after moving to Fairbanks, a friend from Adult Learning, ALPA, Adult Learning Programs of Alaska, said she thought that I was a people person, that I would enjoy working for Fairbanks Resource Agency. So I took the chance, and I applied, and I got accepted for a position working with the DD community. And now I find, almost 8.5 years later, my entire world is associated with the DD community. Not only my friends, my family, coworkers. You can't even walk through the community of Fairbanks without meeting someone, siblings, parents, teachers, coworkers, clients that I've worked with in the past who are working in the community, who are there around us and affecting us on a daily basis. I have an extended family now of 5 children, mixed family, 2 of them with special needs, 14-year-old Down syndrome and an 11-year-old attention deficit hyperactivity disorder that we are constantly struggling for services with. And so my world has been really enlightened through this experience I've had with the DD community. As you can see, I'm not used to speaking publicly. But what I would like to say is, now that I've worked 8.5 years in all aspects, I've worked in group homes, multiple group homes. I've worked with the independent clients who live and work in our community and just need that little extra help from someone helping them set up budgets and make sure they get through their appointments and stuff. I also spent 3 years teaching classes to other direct care workers in relationship building skills, communication skills, de-escalation, and crisis management skills. And I've loved my work. I've had coworkers, I've had friends, family, asked me to take on more roles, and I would love the challenge of taking on more supervisory roles, and I'd love the challenge of furthering an education and working in the DD community. But at this point, I've had to work two jobs for the last 8.5 years, 50 to 70 hours a week. 4 years ago, I started working a home service job on the side. And then 2 years ago, I started my own home service job. And I left the DD community. I found that working for myself in a service job outside of the DD community, I was able to make double the money for the hours worked. So now, in the wintertime, when my business is slow, I have a wonderful relationship with Fairbanks Resource Agency, and I'm able to come back and work for a few months with my friends and my family before a breakup happens, and then I go back out into my business. I see my coworkers, quality workers, who I've known in the past and currently know today, who are looking for other jobs to provide for their families, because the wages that the direct care workers are receiving are not living wages. They're not enough to support our families. So obviously, I am here asking that you fund an increase in direct service wages, or direct service provider wages. It is so important to our clients and our friends in the DD community. They need the continuity of knowing, you know, who they're going to see every day. You know, you all come into this room, you know each other. You know what to expect, somewhat. But you know what to expect from each other because you've built relationships with each other. It's the same way with our developmentally disabled friends. They build relationships with us. They expect to see us. They know what to expect. We know what they like, what they dislike, and we know how to help them navigate through the community and live their lives in a quality manner. So with that said, I thank you again for the time you're spending with us today, and I hope to see some of you later today. So, thank you.
My name is Jeanette Maddox from Fairbanks, and this is my daughter, Michaela.
Okay. Hi, my name is Michaela Donofrio. When I was born, I went to an indefinite learning program until I was 3 years old. They helped me a lot now. Right now, I am on the wait list for services. When I got older, I went to work at a seaside and got to arrest people. I went to work and earn money so I can have my own independent apartment. I also want to get married and be independent. I can't do that alone. I will need my help. Please fund my services that I will need to help me reach my goals. Thank you.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity for us to tell you our stories this morning. My goal for Michaela is the same as hers, although I think she knew it before I did. She attended the infant learning program for 3 years. They worked on every aspect of development with her, and she did learn a lot. After working very hard for a long time on learning the particular skill of opening jars, Michaela said the most scariest thing a parent can hear from their child, "Mommy, I did it all by myself." At 3 years old, she had gotten a bottle of cooking oil and opened it all by herself and poured it on the floor. I know that to get her to the point of doing it all by herself, she had a lot of help. After the infant learning program, she was ready for special ed preschool. On the first day of school, I went with her to meet her teacher. With one hand, she was closing the door, and the other, she was pushing me out, saying, "Mommy, go home." She has always been very independent, but does need help learning skills that will match that independence. As she gets older, she will need more services to help her reach these goals. But I'm afraid that won't happen, or happen easily, because we won't have qualified direct service professionals. We are losing our staff because they can't get higher paying jobs elsewhere. We're asking that you continue to support the elimination of the waitlist for services, increase the living wages of direct service professionals, and fund and increase the state early intervention and infant learning programs. Michaela will reach her goals with a team of qualified professionals behind her, and when she does, I want to hear those scary words again. "Mommy, I did it all by myself." Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Lesko, and I'm president of the Key Coalition of Alaska. And I've had the privilege and the honor to bring some of my friends here with me for the last 22 years, and that's a long time. Would you say hi to the committee, please? So wonderful to have the opportunity to speak to you. Real quickly, the stories you hear today are only symptomatic. It reminds me of when I was in high school, which proves I have a very good memory, of a book that I was, actually a novel that I read, or was forced to read, that started out, "It was the best of times, and it was the worst of times." And I think, wow, this may be it, here in Alaska. It is the best of times, because we have much to celebrate because of our state legislature. Don't ever underestimate the impact you have. The best of times because we are institution free for people who experience disability. Wow. Do you know how awesome that is? Do you know what an impact that makes on our families, on their lives? I hope you do. It's the best of times because through the efforts of the legislature and the administration, we now have, I believe as you all know, an initiative that's been implemented to systematically eradicate what Geraldo Rivera calls the new institution, which is the wait list, that within a few years, hopefully maybe 3 or 4, even 5, we will see an end to the waiting in Alaska. That's awesome. So many things that proves to us it's the best of times when we come together, but it's the worst of times. Some of that you've heard today by personal stories, and we truly mean that, and this is what I want to leave you with. I want to read to you very quickly a snippet of an article that appeared in the Anchorage Daily News on February 9th, 2009. State officials say 21 mentally disabled men lived for 20 years or more in an old building with boarded up windows and nothing but space heaters for heat. It wasn't some neglectful group home. It was the bunkhouse for Henry's Turkey Service. The 21 men were all from Texas, but had lived in Iowa for 20 years or more while working at the plant. Relatives show the Des Moines Register payroll record showing that in January, the company deducted $487 from one worker to pay for room and board, and then another $572 for kind care. His sister told the Register that her brother has, now listen to this, talk about pension plans. Her brother has $80 in savings after over 2 decades of work. $80. The governor of that state said, There are a lot of very good questions about how we got to this point. I'm proud to say this was in the national section of the Anchorage Daily News and not in the local news. We are close to these kinds of headlines. We are close because our community programs are eroding. We don't know what we can say to make an impact on people here. We hear if the administration will add it, we'll support it. We've heard that if the House will add it, the Senate will support it. We've heard if the Senate will add it, the House will support it. Somebody has to take the championship of this cause because our community is at stake. We see a bright light in SB 32. We see that, and I call SB 32, by the way, in my own little humble way, I call it the Community Preservation Act. That's what I call SB 32, because it preserves our community. So please, remember, our community is eroding. When the governor of that state said, how could we get to this point? We know how you can get to this point. We know the effects of erosion on our community programs. And all we're asking you for is one word, and that's justice. That's a big word. That's a huge word, justice. Remember the old saying that says, justice is not something you go out and shop for. It's not something you find. Justice is something you create. And I'd like to leave you with two words about people that I love here. There's Aubrey and his mom. I'm going to put them on the spot. They have a beautiful shirt that they share with two words on it. It says, got key? Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if you got key, you got justice. And if you got justice, you will be the architects of the future of Alaska for our community programs and for our families, our brothers and sisters who experience disabilities. Thank you. Get key if you ain't got it.
Well, I think our time is up. We sincerely appreciate your giving us this time this morning to talk to you and look forward to visiting with you later on the day. Thank you again.
Thank you very much for the joint House and Senate committee is now closed.